The fire started at dawn, on the morning of October 1, 1878. The western district of St. Croix went orange. 53 sugar estates burned across a stretch of land smaller than most American counties, warehouses, plantation houses, cane fields, the administrative buildings that had defined and confined Caribbean life for 200 years. By the time Danish colonial authorities reached the town of Frederiksted, the smoke was visible from the sea. Three women were blamed for starting it. History would call them the Fire Queens. Their names were Mary Thomas, Axelina Solomon, and Matilda Solomon. They were known as Queen Mary, Queen Agnes, and Queen Matilda. Not royalty in any colonial sense, but a title given by the 300 workers who followed them. Workers who had been told 30 years earlier that they were free. They were not free. Before her arrest, Mary Thomas sent a letter. The letter was addressed to the Danish Governor General of the Danish West Indies. Colonial court documents reference it. Portions are paraphrased in the court proceedings, attributed to her as justification for the uprising. The paraphrase describes a demand for renegotiated labor contracts and a formal hearing on wage conditions. The original letter has never been found. What did she actually write? We know what the colonial court said she wrote. We do not know what she wrote. And the difference between those two things is, in a very precise sense, the entire history of the Caribbean. When Danish emancipation came to St. Croix in 1848, it came under duress. A man named General Budoe, his given name John Gottlieb, organized an uprising at Fort Frederick in Frederiksted. On the morning of July 3rd, thousands of enslaved people walked off their estates and surrounded the fort. The colonial governor, Peter von Scholten, issued the proclamation without authorization from Copenhagen. All enslaved people in the Danish West Indies were immediately free. Copenhagen was furious. Von Scholten was recalled and court-martialed, but the emancipation stood in name. What followed was a legal architecture designed to preserve the plantation economy without using the word slavery. The Labor Act of 1849 divided the island's freed workers into two legal categories, those who owned property and those who did not. The vast majority owned nothing. Under the Act, propertyless workers were required to enter into annual labor contracts with estate owners. The contracts were not negotiable. Wages were set by the colonial government at fixed rates, not by supply and demand, not by any mechanism that gave the worker leverage. Workers could not leave the estate they were contracted to without written permission from the owner. If they refused to work, they could be imprisoned. If they organized, they could be imprisoned. If they gathered in groups without permission from the estate holder, they were in violation of colonial law. The legal term for this arrangement was free labor. For 30 years, the workers of St. Croix lived inside this system. Wages stayed flat as the cost of imported food rose steadily. A drought in the 1870s destroyed subsistence gardens that had supplemented what the contracts paid. The global sugar market collapsed in the mid-1870s. Not because the workers produced less, but because beet sugar from Europe undercut Caribbean cane on the world market, and the plantation owners, now in financial distress, responded by reducing rations and delaying wage payments rather than selling land or renegotiating the terms that kept workers tied to their estates. By 1878, the workers of the western district of St. Croix were going hungry inside a system that called them free citizens. Mary Thomas was born in approximately 1840. She had been enslaved before emancipation. She survived emancipation, the Labor Act, 30 years of annual contracts, and she had watched every legal avenue for change close, one by one. What records exist of her are colonial records, arrest logs, court transcripts, Danish administrative correspondence that named her only to condemn her. She left no memoirs. She left no diaries in any archive that has survived. Before the fire, she left a letter, and the letter is gone. The morning of October 1st began with a meeting at the Catherine's Rest Estate. What was said at that meeting is not in the record. What happened next is, the workers walked off their estates. They marched to the warehouses. They marched to the plantation houses, and they set fire to them. The fires burned for 3 days across the Frederiksted district. 53 estates were damaged or destroyed. The destruction covered nearly every major sugar estate in the western parish. Colonial losses ran to hundreds of thousands of Danish kroner. The workers destroyed as specifically and deliberately as they could. They burned estate infrastructure while largely sparing the small worker cottages on the same properties. The plantation houses went, the counting houses went, the machinery that processed cane into export profit went. The homes of the people who had been imprisoned in the system, those largely remained standing. This was not chaos. This was a choice. The Danish colonial government's response came in two stages. First, military force. Danish warships were dispatched to Frederiksted within days. Within days. Troops moved through the western district in coordinated sweeps. Over 500 people were detained in the initial arrests, workers, bystanders, and organizers alike. Their categories collapsed by the colonial court into a single legal definition, participants in an insurrection. Second, trial. The colonial court system in the Danish West Indies was not a place where law was tested. It was a place where colonial order was confirmed. Proceedings were conducted in Danish, a language most defendants did not speak fluently. Access to defense was severely limited. The trials moved quickly. Sentences were pronounced within weeks of the fires. Mary Thomas, Axelina Salomon, and Mathilda Salomon were convicted of leading the insurrection. Their sentences, life imprisonment in Denmark. Nowhere in the court proceedings was her original letter entered as evidence, only the colonial paraphrase of it, translated and summarized by the same administration that was prosecuting her. What she had actually written, in her own hand, to the Governor General before any fire was set. That document played no formal role in the trial that ended her life. It was referenced. It was not present. They were put on a ship. They crossed the Atlantic as prisoners. In the hold of the same kind of vessel that had brought their ancestors in chains a century earlier. They arrived in Copenhagen and were transferred through the Danish prison system, first to Christiansø, a prison island in the Baltic Sea, then to facilities on the Danish mainland. The contrast between the island where they were born and the island where they were imprisoned was not incidental. It was, in a very deliberate way, the point. The colonial project had always been about distance. Physical, legal, psychological. To imprison a Caribbean woman for resisting in the Caribbean by removing her to the Baltic Sea was to complete the logic of colonialism. The Caribbean was a place to extract from, never a place to belong to. Mary Thomas died in 1895 in a Danish prison. She was approximately 55 years old. She never returned to St. Croix. She never heard a verdict revised in her favor. She never knew whether anyone had found the letter. Axelina Salomon died in imprisonment in Denmark in 1897. Mathilda Salomon survived longest, dying in the early 1900s. None of them returned home. Now return to the letter. The colonial court documents from the Fireburn trials are housed in the Rigsarkivet, the Danish National Archives in Copenhagen. Scholars working through the colonial records of the Danish West Indies have found the court reference to Mary Thomas's letter. They have found the paraphrased demands attributed to her, renegotiated wages, formal hearings, legal recognition of workers' right to negotiate. These paraphrased passages appear in the court record as evidence of seditious intent. The original letter is not in the archive. It is not in the Virgin Islands records that transferred to the United States in 1917 when the Danish West Indies were purchased for $25 million in gold. It is not in any collection that researchers have been able to locate in either Copenhagen or the Caribbean. The letter is known only through the colonial court's summary of its contents, a summary written to convict, not to preserve. What this means, practically, is this. The most complete account of why the fireburn happened, written by the woman at the center of it, addressed to the government responsible for the conditions that caused it, exists only as filtered through the document designed to punish her for writing it. This is not unusual in Caribbean history. It is the rule. The archive was maintained by the people who needed a particular version of events to survive. The people who lived those events wrote letters that were used against them, and then, once their purpose as evidence had been served, were not preserved. The record we have is the record of prosecution, not of life. The United States purchased the Danish West Indies in 1917. The territory became the U.S. Virgin Islands. For decades, the fireburn remained a local story, taught in island schools and carried in family memory, but largely absent from American historical narratives. In 1977, the United States Postal Service issued a commemorative stamp featuring the image of Mary Thomas. She appeared in a head wrap, her expression direct and forward-facing. The stamp was part of a series honoring Caribbean resistance figures, the first time her image appeared on an official American document. In 2018, Queen Margrethe of Denmark made a state visit to the U.S. Virgin Islands. Danish officials formally acknowledged the injustices of the colonial period. The Fireburn of 1878 was mentioned by name. It was not an apology, it was an acknowledgement. The legal and financial difference between those two words has been debated in Caribbean and Danish policy circles ever since. For the descendants of the workers who burned the estates, the distinction is not academic. The women who set fire to the estates of St. Croix were not acting from impulse. They were acting from 30 years of accumulated legal dispossession. They had exhausted every quiet method. The fires were not the beginning of their resistance. They were the end of their patience, the terminus of 3 decades of formal requests, labor refusals, and petitions that went unanswered. And before the fire, there was a letter we cannot read, written by a woman who understood that what she was about to do would be used against her, who wrote anyway, who asked for something reasonable and formal, and then, receiving no answer, gave the signal. What she asked for in that letter, the paraphrased version at least, was not revolution, it was renegotiation. It was the legal right to be treated as a free person. Denmark locked her in a cell until she died for asking. The question the archive cannot answer, and the question Caribbean history has been living with for 150 years, is whether what happened in Frederiksted in 1878 was a failure or a victory. The estates burned, but the Labor Act persisted for over a decade. 3 women died in Danish prisons. 500 more were tried and sentenced. And yet within 15 years, the worst provisions of the labor contract system had been dismantled. Within 40 years, the islands had been sold to a country that in its own time would have its own accounting with the legacy of what happened there. Was the Fireburn a defeat because the women who started it died in chains, or a victory because the system they targeted did not survive them? There is one more thing the archive records without explanation. Among the items listed as confiscated during the arrest of Mary Thomas was a small bound journal. The journal is listed in the evidence inventory. It is not listed among items returned, and it does not appear in the archived exhibits from the trial. Where it went, whether it was read by colonial authorities and destroyed, whether it was lost in administrative transfer, whether it ended up in a private collection somewhere in Copenhagen, is unknown. We have the inventory that says it existed. We do not have the journal. In Caribbean history, this is not remarkable. It is the pattern. The record of what was taken is preserved. The content of what was taken is not. The colonial archive is an inventory of absence, a meticulous accounting of everything that was removed and kept and lost, organized by the hands of the people who did the removing. Mary Thomas walked into a Danish courtroom with her words already translated, her letter already paraphrased, her journal already missing. She was convicted by a record she had not authored. She died in a country she had never chosen. And what she actually said, in her own words, in her own language, to the government that had caged her twice, remains the open question at the center of every account of the Fireburn. The fires have been out for nearly 150 years. The question is still burning.